We all got a story to tell. Yeah. Like to share mine.
I remember fifth grade in the loo and all the crazy things my family ever went through. Staying with my auntie up in the cabin. It wasn't all good, but that's how it had to be. Rolling with my big cousin, it was all complete. Around the same time, water first hit the street. Everybody getting high, including my mama. And kin folks steady talking, increasing the drama. They said me and my sisters think we're better because we talk proper. But our mama taught us real good before that stuff got her. We had to move out, Milwaukee the next stop. Chill for a while. Now we're back at the bus stop. St. Louis, here we come again. And it's my fifth middle school. I had a run of friends, I mean associates. Cause no matter how close we get, I'm always close to split, never a social fit. Eighth grade, now I'm cripping it up. And plus church too, ain't no set tripping with us. Cause we'll hurt you. Man, I was so confused. I didn't think that I could win, so I chose to lose. There were a lot of things that didn't make sense. Till my friend got shot, they blew his brains on the fence. While he was laying there, I saw him take his last breath. He didn't want to die, but you don't have to ask death. Come on.
This is my story. This is my song. Praising my Savior.
Anthony Ward, a UW student, Odyssey graduate, and recording artist, calls himself the Hope Boy instead of the Dope Boy, using hip-hop to reach a gifted younger generation in danger of dropping out of school. I'm Emily Auerbach, and this is University of the Year. My guest today is Gloria Ladson Billings, an international leader in scholarship focusing on the education of African-American children. She developed the concept of culturally relevant pedagogy, explored in her groundbreaking book, The Dream Keepers, Successful Teachers of African-American Children, and explored critical race theory in her book, Crossing Over to Canaan, The Journey of New Teachers in Diverse Classrooms. Professor Ladson Billings is currently the Kellner Family Chair in Urban Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she joins me today to talk about her growing interest in hip-hop, hip-hope, the role of hip-hop in education. Welcome to University of the Year.
Thank you.
I know in the past we talked a bit about your Dream Keepers work and just the pressing need to find a new approach to teaching. Can you remind us of sort of, I guess, the gravity of the situation? Why is it important that we address the issue of what's happening in our schools?
So Dream Keepers actually comes out of my experience as a graduate student at Stanford University in California, where almost everything I read talked about the kind of hopelessness that existed for improving the education of African-American students. And I would see it myself as a part of the research I was doing as a doctoral student. But it was always problematic for me because I was one of those students, and somehow there were people who cared enough and worked hard enough with me and my brother to ensure that we were academically successful and were able to move out of poverty and to have successful careers. So I guess in some ways I flipped the question from what's wrong with African-American students to what's right with them and what happens in a classroom where teachers, students, parents, the community gets it right.
And I saw everywhere, including on Wikipedia, it said that you're really credited with this phrase, culturally relevant pedagogy. Tell us about that.
So part of my training is in anthropology, and so I'm very interested in culture. And I saw that there were other terms being used for bringing culture into the classroom. There were terms like culturally responsive, culturally mitigated, culturally congruent. And all of them kind of talked about thinking about culture as a way to add to what was existing in a classroom. But there was not very much out there that talked about how would you use culture to transform the classroom. So instead of saying, well, let's add some music by this person, or let's have some art pieces by a person of a particular culture, how do you actually use the culture as the basis for teaching and learning? And so culturally relevant seemed to be the most appropriate term.
I know some of the Odyssey Project students that I work with talk about how in their schools, maybe for Black history, you do a little Rosa Parks and maybe a snippet of I Have a Dream, and then the teachers would kind of feel like that was enough. They would just sort of add in a little bit here and then feel they had been culturally diverse. What would you be talking about if you looked into a middle school year or a high school year to really make a difference and have that sort of transformative effect in the classroom? What would need to happen?
Well, in some ways, you've asked me the right question, because I used to be a history social science teacher in Philadelphia. And I did teach middle school. And I would probably, you know, if I were starting today, because I certainly know a lot more now than I knew when I started back in the late 60s, but I would probably start a teaching of U.S. history, not with the age of exploration, which is a typical chronological approach, but I might start with someone like Fannie Lou Hamer and ask the question of the students, does American democracy work for Fannie Lou Hamer? She is poor. She is black, and she is female. Because if it works for her, then we do have a working and functioning democracy. And then we might go back and look at, well, what was the plan? I've also figured out that it's probably not that useful to talk about separate and distinct groups, but it's much more powerful if you talk about a particular concept that cuts across groups. So I might talk to students about, just raise the question, how did we all get here? What's the migratory story for each and every group? How are they similar? How are they different? And how do those similarities and differences play out in current day experiences?
And when, it sounds to me as if you were a pretty stellar teacher to get people thinking and to have their identity tied into the learning. When you were trying to figure out, or if you continue to try to figure out why the statistics are so bad, and including in Wisconsin, I think we're about the worst in the nation in terms of the achievement gap.
That's correct.
Right. And then there's this Dane County, race to equity report that, again, we're not doing well in terms of making sure that there's sort of a equal success rate. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think one of the things I want to make clear is that when we talk about Wisconsin students performing, Wisconsin having the largest disparity, I think what we miss is how well white students are doing. It's not just how poorly black students are doing. It's how well white students are doing. And so we never seem to ask the question, why is it working so well for this group of kids and so poorly for another group? So it's the disparity. It's the difference that I think we really need to kind of hone in on. And I think there are multiple factors. Clearly, if we look at our teaching force, it is a largely white teaching force nationally. It's even more so in a place like Wisconsin that has about a 5% African-American population, somewhere in that neighborhood of Latinos. So just the demographic situation in Wisconsin means that students are less likely to have a teacher who looks like them in the classroom. However, I don't want to presume that just because a teacher looks like you, that the teacher has your cultural and social interests at heart. Clearly, there are white teachers, and I wrote about some of them, who can do this work.
Mm-hmm. And you've, adopted a growing interest in hip-hop and other methods of kind of, I guess, approaching education through alternative means, including seeing it, how it works at say, an alternative school. Can you talk about that and maybe let us hear an example of how it is working in a school that maybe helps students who have fallen through the cracks of the regular system?
Excellent question. And I think, there are those who will look at me and say, wait a minute, you have all this gray hair in your head and you're doing hip hop. Part of it has to do with, if you look at what we've outlined as the components of culturally relevant pedagogy, we talked about a laser-like focus on student learning, a development of cultural competence, and an engagement of what I would call a critical consciousness. Having kids learn to ask really hard questions about questions of equity and justice. But it's that second component, the cultural competence, that has gotten me thinking about youth culture, because my original research was in elementary schools. And elementary school children tend to not bring youth culture into the classroom in the same ways. I chose elementary schools because they're less complex. I could be in a classroom with the teacher, spend an entire day and see the interactions with the teacher and the students. In middle and high schools, kids are changing classes.
Right.
There's just a lot going on. But I did begin to realize that I had people at the secondary level saying, you know, we love your work, but, you know, we're not sure it's going to work for us at the high school or at the middle school. And I began to realize that the fact that early adolescents and adolescents are so immersed in this thing called youth culture that we hadn't really thought about it. So as I began to explore youth culture, I was just astounded at the breadth and depth and the expanse of what we call hip hop across race, class, gender. It is a phenomenon. Indeed, it is a worldwide phenomenon. I was in Scotland last month, and I walked by a club, and there's a DJ in there, and they're doing, they're having a hip-hop set, and I, you know, poked my head in the door, and sure enough, there weren't any black people in there, but mm-hmm. everybody was enjoying the music.
And if you had to define hip-hop, like as if you were in an elevator with someone and you just needed a blip that would define hip-hop, how would you do it?
Well, I guess the current way in which we talk about hip-hop is this, quote, flipping something out of nothing. It's not merely doing rhymes or, you know, it is composed of four major elements. That is what's called DJing, MCing, that is the spoken word part of it, B-boying or B-girling, which is the dancing, and the graffiti arts. And those of us who are doing scholarly work in this area always say, and the fifth element is knowledge. So it has those five components.
Well, set up the example we're about to hear from an alternative school in Washington, D.C. How is it hip-hop? Who are we going to be listening to, and why was it created?
So you're going to listen to a piece from a dean of students at an alternative school, one of these schools where this is the last chance for kids. If they're not successful here, they're going to be expelled from schools altogether. And it's in the Washington, D.C. area. The teacher is a man named Karega Bailey, who is a, as we say, a hip-hop head. And he had the assignment of making the kids come to Saturday school. And he said to the principal, Saturday, these kids don't come to school Monday through Friday. The principal said, that's part of the job. They have to come on these Saturday schools. So what he said to the kids was, you have to come to Saturday school. Saturday school is from 9 to noon, but I go into the studio at 12:05. If you are at Saturday school, you go into the studio with me. And so what you are going to hear are the kids making it to that studio and participating in the composition. The entire production was actually done by the kids with the teacher doing the spoken word part of it.
Walls that lives a separate nation, a class who suffers from the trauma caused by separation. The gavel slams and families tear to different destinations. It leaves a residue behind. Listen to what I'm saying. When at my desk, I sometimes listen to their conversation, and all they talk about is violation or probation, or how their brother just got shipped to a different location. I say, my God, I can't believe this is my generation. I understand that circumstances sometimes alter cases, but resiliency and faith can take you many places. But tell me, how do you console the woes of lonely souls if no one knows? Beneath the concrete, there's a growing rose. How will they ever know their value if they're never told? How will they ever learn what love is if they're never shown? This here is food for thought. I nourish them and watch them grow. And from the book of life, I water every seed I sow. So,
oh, if I could fly away from here, I would go anywhere. I would do anything.
That's so powerful. I'm always struck with pieces like that, how much is said in just a few lines. What do you hear when you hear something like that?
So because I know Correga, I know that that piece comes out of his own pain. His own brother was a community activist in Sacramento, and he was shot and killed in the street. So he has this deep connection with what the students have are experiencing. The other thing I think is really interesting is that his job didn't really require him to teach. He was the dean. But he said to the principal, I won't take this job unless you let me have at least two classes. I need to connect with kids on something other than discipline. So I hear his passion for them. And I also understand that one of his teaching strategies is as kids come in the morning, the very first question he asks them, and now they know he's going to ask that, is what's the last thing you listened to on your iPod before you came into school? And why did you listen to that? And it becomes a place where their literacy work begins, because all kids have favorite songs or certain things. They begin to see, oh, like six of us are all listening to this, or four of us are listening to something else. So it creates community for them. So I hear all of that when I listen to it.
Well, and the rhymes, I know it's much more than rhymes, but the rhymes when you've got violation, probation, location. I mean, it really is impressive the way so many polysyllabic words kind of get used in just a matter of a few seconds.
And that's part of the artistry of hip hop. Kids don't like stuff that's dumbed down, and they don't like dumbed down hip hop. They want it to be really complex. This summer, I met with a College Access Program group of kids, rising 10th graders and 11th graders. And I was talking to them about writing that college essay. And I shared an example of a typical essay with them. And I said, you know, this student's a good student, but this is boring. I mean, I really don't want to meet this person because they're not saying anything. And then I read another one where a student really shared a very personal story about her younger sister's fairly traumatic birth. She was born with a major deficiency or defect, and how she used some wonderful language. She said, you know, the doctors were running down the hall like they were in the Olympics. You know, I mean, it was. And so then I shared with them a sort of very old school hip hop piece by Kool Moe Dee called I Go to Work, which is one of my favorites. And I think I like it because he actually uses the word dissertation. You know, the PhD professor in me can't help that. But it's him really bragging about all the stuff he does. And he uses these wonderful metaphors to describe himself as a boxer, as an architect. And then this final line is like, you want to know my occupation? I get paid to rock the nation. I love that. And so I said, you know, that's an example of someone who's not afraid to really sell themselves and say, I'm this person. And so I said, as you sit, you know, these youngsters, the 11th graders are going into 12th grade in the fall. I said, as you sit and start writing these college essays, don't be afraid to really shine, to really talk about, you know, I'm really good at this, or this is what I'm special at.
Well, I noticed that one of the lines in the flyaway piece was, how will they know their value?
If they're never told.
Yeah, that they somehow have to find these gifts that maybe are latent. Maybe no one has recognized them as gifts, but they're gifts nonetheless. More on Hip Hop, Hip Hope, Hip Hop in the Classroom when we continue in a moment on University of the Air. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Gloria Ladson Billings, and we are talking about hip-hop, hip-hope, the role of hip-hop in education. We were listening to some pretty powerful examples of hip-hop and how it can be used to reach school children who have fallen through the cracks and are in an alternative school. And before we go further with it, let me play devil's advocate and ask whether, if you take hip-hop and assume that that is how you reach at-risk youth, Are you in any way in danger of pandering or in sort of assuming, okay, this is what we do with urban at-risk children? I mean, is it stereotyping at all?
Great question. And in fact, I would say that I never think of it as something you do only with urban / at-risk youth. It's what you do with young people. In fact, hip-hop as an industry couldn't exist if it weren't for white middle-class kids because they buy the music. Often when I give presentations and I ask, are there questions, even if the question doesn't arise, I raise it. I said, here's a question that's in your head right now, mm-hmm. so let me just raise it. What if the kids aren't, quote, into hip-hop? Because there's a presumption. And I always have the same question back to them. What if they aren't into Shakespeare?
Mm-hmm. You find a way.
Tell me the last person who was into the Scarlet Letter. Mm-hmm. Okay. We teach what we value. So part of using hip-hop for me is helping kids understand that as a teacher, I value youth culture. It's not the only kind of youth culture, but it is one that is pretty ubiquitous.
So another devil's advocate question. What about the fact that so many lyrics are misogynist or they seem to promote violence? There's a lot of negative things that happen, particularly towards women that are in those lyrics. Some of the people who are the successful rap artists have a very flamboyant and controversial lifestyle. What about the problem of setting that up as kind of role model?
So part of the bad publicity of hip-hop is that people tend not to understand that there are genres within that genre. So we don't stop going to film because there's pornographic film out there. We don't stop reading books because there's trash out there. We are selective. So as a teacher, I'd have an obligation to select those pieces and to say up front to students, we're not going to be using things that are homophobic, that are misogynistic, that are racist. Now, at a college level, on my syllabi when I teach these courses, I say much of what we encounter will deal with profanity, violence towards women, racism. I said, and please don't see this as an endorsement on the part of the instructor. We have to know what's there as adults. Mm-hmm. But clearly in a K-12 setting, that would be out of bounds. I would never use that music.
So give me an example then of a work of hip hop that you could bring into not an alternative school, but a regular classroom, and not just to sort of reach children who are disaffected and need to be sort of brought back into the joy of learning, but somehow integrated into the curriculum.
So there's a wonderful piece I like to use by Mos Def called Mathematics. And in that piece, he goes through all the statistics that youth of color in particular are faced with, and basically saying, if you don't know these numbers, if you don't know the mathematics, you don't have an understanding of what's happening in your community. So it's a great way to get kids interested in statistics.
What about science?
Well, I'm glad you asked about that, because we've been working for the last several years with a group of scholars at Teachers College, Columbia, Christopher Emden, who is a science educator. And Chris is a bench scientist with degrees from Rensselaer Polytechnic, but with a love of hip hop. And so he's paired science with hip hop. And one of the most well-known artists, the GZA from the Wu-Tang Clan, loved science. He said, somehow I couldn't make it in school, but I always had this love for science. And so he's written pieces on dark matter and things like this. And so what we've done out of New York is created what's called science battles, where we have kids develop a science concept and really create a rhyme around that displays their clear understanding and knowledge of that concept. We use the term battles because that's what happens in hip hop. You have these battles in what's called the cipher. But what Chris tries to help students understand is that scientists are always in battles. Somebody writes a journal article, and then somebody says, no, that's not right. Mm-hmm. And they write back, and then someone else writes. And so that kind of interchange is how science develops. So we have kids using the art of the hip-hop rap battle, but using it with science.
Well, let's hear an example. So we're going to hear one of the winners of the contest, Kabari Johnson.
I'm about to tell y'all a little something about working kinetic energy, all right? So clap your hands for me, please. Check. Yo, yeah, this concept is applied to all lives. We stride time distance, be a witness to the prize. Be a man, understand you comprehending this is vital. Work equals FD, the equation for survival. Your only rival is friction, don't get caught up in the drag. You better prepare, cause obstacles fight back. When you get knocked down, no, please don't cry. Just get up and apply more force next time. One day, I was dreaming with a really strong hope that I'll make it. But to make it takes more than just believing. These resistance slash demons were kinda holding me back, and I let them, but the simple way to get me on track was force times displace is work, no debate. I'll take that concept, apply it to my mistakes, and now I'm progressing, a natural rap genius. I'ma get an A if I see this on a regen. Here's a lesson, I know it kinda hurts, but if you truly wanna work, then there must be progression, cause FD equals W, the rule, and the unit measurement for the product is called joules. Cool, I did the work, I'ma try to let it flow. The more people I know, kinetic energy grows, so I'ma go to work, convert all of my potential, and as my feet increases, and I'ma grow exponential. The work has been applied, if my equations are correct, the energy that is left creates a domino effect. My mass is what I'm bringing to the table. Underestimate your wish that you had brought a bigger dinner plate. Separate me from the fakes, let me educate. Velocity's my following, and that's what I'ma generate through these shows and gigs, just overcoming all the friction to the point where friction doesn't even make a difference. I feed my interest with the laws of physics. When M and V multiplies, the picture is painted vivid. The work was just something that got me inside the door. Now we squaring the V and it's exponentially more. I got a lot in store for the V's, cause I'm progressing my M. And when you multiply them, there's no end to the kinetic energy. You better be prepared, filling you up with envy with my 1F MV squared. Yo, here's a lesson, I know it kinda hurts, but if you truly wanna work, then there must be progression, cause FD equals W's the rule, and the unit measurement for the product is called joules. Cool, I did the work, I'ma try to let it flow. The more people I know, kinetic energy grows, so I'ma go to work, convert all of my potential, and as my speed increases, then I'ma go exponential.
That's science genius battle winner Kabari Johnson. So when you hear that, what excites you about it?
Well, I go back to when Jabari got started in the process. He didn't think he was college material. Jabari is just finishing his sophomore year at Hunter College. And now he's what we call a science battle, science genius ambassador, which means he comes back to his high school and helps young people enter the process.
And how do you see his experience with hip-hop, with spoken word, as part of what made him decide he was college material?
Well, he'd always been, you know, just enamored with hip-hop. Growing up in New York, he loved it, but thought it was so separate and distinct from any kind of intellectual pursuits that would be valued. But his ability to see someone like Chris, who has a PhD and is a, you know, faculty member, love hip hop and at the same time love science, made it a possibility for him. And so we just really pushed him. We said, you have what it takes intellectually. So he's just a wonderful story. Some subsequent winners, I think sometimes when I share Jabari's work, people think, well, yeah, black boy, yeah, that makes sense. But we actually, subsequent winners have included girls, Muslim girls, which I think is sort of interesting. And just it's kind of taken the city by storm because everybody now wants to participate in science genius and the rap battles.
So I have a process question. You know, listening to all the rhymes and the rhythm that he was doing there, how much of that would you say was carefully written out and crafted and the way you might if you were putting together a sonnet and trying to get the meter and the rhymes and everything, and how much was improv?
So I think the first part of the process for the students is to determine what's the science concept and do you really understand it, and really teaching the science. Then crafting your rap. So they write it all out at some point because they have a time limit. They have to compete. They need to get their background music in there. I mean, there's a lot of different things they need to do. So they're pretty precise with it. It is not what we would call a freestyle. And I think probably the most challenging part for the kids is just making sure they learn the science and the science is correct.
So start with that as the core and then yes. Play with it. Because I have seen artists where they do an amazing job of improv. Anthony Ward, where we opened with his one of the tracks on his CD, I've seen him in a gathering create a new verse out of the people in the room and things that are happening around him where you know he couldn't possibly have planned it because someone walks in and suddenly they're part of the lyrics. And there is that strong improv almost as if coming from the spirit of jazz,
right,
where you incorporate a new voice or a new theme and run with it.
Right. So people who are freestylers, as we call them, are amazing. Each summer we do an institute for teachers here on campus called Hip Hop in the Heartland. And one of the regular teachers is a man named Baba Israel. And one of the things that he's very strong at is improv or freestyle. And he'll ask the people in the room, go in your backpacks, go in your wallet, pull something out and hold it up. And he'll go around the entire room incorporating those objects in a freestyle, which kind of blows folks away. It speaks to the mental and cognitive dexterity that hip-hop artists actually have.
I've also seen some folks who are gifted at something like that who then need to take a standardized test that maybe you need to get a job as a teacher in the school system or to go on in a certain way, and they score low on reading comprehension, on maybe grammar and other things. And there's this disconnect between this verbal dexterity, this artistic gift that they've got, and then the scores on tests.
So one of my favorite lines in Jabari's piece, and it got a big applause from the audience, is, I'm going to get an A if I see this on the Regents. So as a New Yorker, he has to take the New York Board of Regents exam. So it's like, if I see this thing
on there,
I'm going to get an A.
Yeah.
So part of it is this, as you say, it's a kind of a disconnect. It's a very flat and static way in which we think, and linear way of thinking, when you have someone who has a much more dynamic and almost explosive way of connecting things.
There's also this great poem by Langston Hughes called PhD, where, you know, the guy's got a PhD, very smart, book learning, but knows nothing
right
about the ways of the world. But it still seems to me, let's say you get students engaged in hip hop and turned on by learning and wanting to come to Saturday school and all the rest of it, you still have to prepare them to do standard algebra and to pass tests and to be advancing and to be able to take the ACTs and all those hurdles that exist. How do you see sort of bridging the gap between, let's say you get a child or a youth turned on by learning, feeling gifted, feeling, yes, I am college material, but you've still got these deficits in terms of the standard measurements.
So that really speaks to the work of my colleague out in California, Claude Steele, around stereotype threat, that we still have people who believe just because of their status characteristics, whether they are female or whether they are a person of color or whether they have an immigrant status, that there are certain things they, quote, can't do. And I think Claude and his associates have done really compelling experiments to show that when you can reduce the threat, then people can thrive.
Do you mean by that? Reduce the threat in terms of in their own mind?
Yes.
Okay.
So, for example, in his experiments, what they do is they have freshmen from Stanford take the graduate record exam. So they know that they're all at the same disadvantage. It is that's a test that you take when you finish college, mm-hmm. not when you begin. One group, all they do is let them begin. The control group just takes the test. And one of the things on the test asks you your race. With the second group, they say, before they sit down to the exam, they said, for some reason, African Americans seem to do really well on this test. We don't know why. With the control group, they get the disparity that has been typical. With the experimental group, there's almost no difference in the results of white and black test takers.
That's pretty amazing.
So the stereotype threat, and they've just replicated this work over and over and over again. And what Claude would argue is that we all suffer stereotype threat in certain circumstances. He gives the example of traveling down in Silicon Valley to a meeting at Google. He says, you know, I have a PhD. I'm in the American Academy of Sciences. I'm in the National Academy of Education. I think I'm perhaps somebody. He said, but I walk into Google with this head full of gray hair, and I feel just incredibly old. He said, they're, you know, in the cubicles, people have their bikes. I drove. I'm monitoring everything I say because it's like, does that sound old? You know. So we all experience stereotype threat. The question is, to what degree is that threat going to hinder your progress in post-secondary experiences, in the job market? One of the things we're really working with young people who do participate in hip-hop arts and is helping them understand that you're probably in better shape to stand before an audience than your peers.
Oh, and that would translate over into a lot of different things where public speaking is important.
Yes. You can go into an interview.
Or join the debate team.
Yes.
Or, you know, something where you have to think on your feet and be up in front of a crowd.
Yes.
I suppose besides the sort of self-concept, you know, am I able to do this? Then you've got the next hurdle, which is, are teachers going to write me off and put me in the track for not college bound?
And that's the place where the advocacy of other folks need to come in. We need teachers to step up and say, no, we're going to give this youngster this opportunity. I've been on a sort of mini campaign with people in the community saying, you should encourage your youngster to take an advanced placement class, not necessarily all advanced placement classes. And in fact, I don't think anybody should take all advanced placement classes. I think people should take advanced placement classes in those courses that they have deep interest in. There was a wonderful segment done by the New York Times on the problem with advanced placement, and the then dean of the School of Education at Stanford, Deborah Stipek, talked about the fact that her own daughter took advanced placement French literature. And she said, my daughter, the Saturday she went and took the test, she came home and said to me, whew, now I never have to speak French again. She said, you know, that shouldn't be the point, right? No. So we really want kids to go further and deeper in those things that interest them. And so I say to parents, even if their kids are somewhat mediocre students, let them have a shot at least one advanced placement class, not to take the test, but to experience the information and the curriculum that is more rigorous. Even if they come out of that with a C, that's a lot better than taking a low-level course.
And just even to have that adjective advanced in front
yes.
of something you're doing perhaps changes the game. We're going to look at a groundbreaking program here at the University of Wisconsin when we continue in a moment with University of the Air. I'm Emily Auerbach, back with Gloria Ladson Billings. We are talking about hip-hop, hip-hope, the role of hip-hop in education. We've been talking about hip-hop throughout the country and hearing examples from Washington, D.C., and from, where was the battles?
New York City.
New York City. But you write in some of the articles I've read that you've written, you write about spoken word programs right here at UW-Madison and how influential that was in your own thinking as a scholar. Can you talk about that?
So the University of Wisconsin-Madison has the nation's only spoken word hip-hop arts scholarship program. So I'm sure you can go to other campuses and there are student organizations that sponsor and support hip-hop. But nowhere else are you going to find a program where we have literally scoured the country looking for artists and offer them scholarships, much the same way the athletic department is looking for football players or basketball players or volleyball players. So First Wave is our program. I'm delighted to be affiliated with the program. I actually serve as a chair of the program's advisory board. And the way I got involved with the program is that a number of the First Wave students have a deep interest in teaching, but they were disappointed with some of the stuff they were seeing in a traditional teacher ed program. So as a kind of stopgap remedy, I thought, well, what I might do is come up with some courses that would interest them in education, because many of them are choosing alternative routes to certification, things like Teach for America and other alternative certifications. So I wanted to make sure they weren't going into the classroom with no background so that they would end up being very discouraged and ultimately leaving the profession. In fact, Kariga Bailey is a alternative certification teacher, so that's how he and I got talking. He didn't come to UW-Madison, but that's how he made it into the classroom. So that's kind of what First Wave does. We're really at a point now where we're trying to think of where will they go for graduate degrees, because many of the students are graduating, have graduated, and they want to continue kind of honing their craft. I want to be clear, however, though, even though we offer them scholarships because of their hip-hop artistry, they have to take the courses that are offered at UW. They have to take a regular major or whatever. We don't have a hip-hop major. But we do have this opportunity for them to perform. And, of course, they're an award-winning program. They performed in London at the London Olympics, the Cultural Olympics. They've performed in New York City. They've performed at the American Sociological Association, at the National Council of Teachers of English, at the NCAA. So they are quite an accomplished group.
And they must come up with quite the resume, then when they go on the job market. When you're looking for the spoken word artist to bring into this scholarship program, what about a situation where you run into a really gifted artist, where you're blown away by a performance, but they haven't had third year math, they have no foreign language, and a lot of the things that are hurdles to getting into a top-ranked school like University of Wisconsin-Madison would, in a traditional admissions process, weed them out?
So we can't get around admissions. There is really no point in bringing them to the university to have them sit in classrooms and compete with young people who have had those background and preparatory experiences. So we are looking for people who have the academics as well as the arts.
And give me an example of a spoken word student from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and how the program would allow him or her to use their gifts.
So we bring them in as cohort members. So they never come in just as, oh, I'm here as a student doing my thing. They identify strongly as a cohort, and we do have a set of courses for them in their early years. Their artistic director is in our dance department, Chris Walker, and he works with them, helping them hone their craft. They have to take dance courses, which I think some of them are surprised at. They have to take some art courses, visual arts courses. And during the year, they will have several opportunities to perform. They perform at the Overture for their lines breaks. They do an open mic session. And then they do a lot of community outreach. So many of our local schools love having our First Wave students come out and share their gifts with them.
I saw the director, Willie Nye, had done a TED Talk and used one of the students, Sophia Snow, actually at the very beginning of his talk, just as a way in. Let's listen to that and then talk a little bit more about what's going on right here in Madison.
You will not waste me. You will not fold me. Hide me in your back pocket. You will not lose me in the bottom of your laundry basket. You will not fade my design, dim my bright, turn my shine into your shadow. You will not excuse me. You will not draw my figure. You will not figure me out. You will not wrap me in your self-made cellophane ego. You will not suffocate me. I will see through you. You will not confuse me for your pet. You will not pet me like your dog. You will not dog me like we're boys. You will not be boy at your age. You will not drown me in the tide of your temper. You will not outclap my thunder. You will not strike me. You are not lightning. You are not likely to outright swipe me. You will not crack my stone stare. You will not break my glass parts. You will not carve my calluses smooth or hack my smoothness coarse. You will not crash into my drive. You will not ride my success without my permission. I will not be written off as too angry, too feminist, too victim. You will not diminish the light that brought your sinking ship to shore. I stand too tall. You will not swim through me. I will not swallow my wide. You will not wade my coast with dirty feet. You will not pollute me. You will not use me as your clean slate to stain me with your repeated mistake. You will not mistake my kindness as being blinded. I will see through you. You will not drain my flame to flicker. You will not dilute my message. I will not water this down. You will not treat me like the child inside you. Abuse me like I did what's been done to you, what he did to your mother, what you do to yourself, what she did to your self-esteem, or whatever excuse you use to use me. You will love me with every ounce of your weight, or you will leave me with my queendom in full bloom, and whether you wither or grow in your own time, you will not waste me.
I hear quite a bit of feminism in what she does with it compared to the other two that we've already heard.
Right. And I think that the spoken word allows for the more sort of poetic, not just get the rhyme, but get the meaning, get the power, get the influence of life experience into the student's artistry. A lot of these students come out of high school programs. And when I say high school, not necessarily based in the high school, but serving high school students. So we get students from New York's Urban Word. We get students from Kumba Links out of Chicago. We get kids from the Milwaukee programs. We get kids from California. There's a wonderful Students at the Center program in Sacramento. One of our students in last year's cohort is the son of Jeff Chang. And for those who know hip-hop history, Jeff Chang has written the definitive book on hip-hop called Can't Stop, Won't Stop, on the history of hip-hop. And rather than stay in California, we get his son to come to the Midwest because of the reputation of our program.
So that's hip-hop in the heartland?
Yes.
I've seen sort of academic articles, which is kind of an amusing, you know, place to be discussing hip-hop with footnotes and all the rest of it, but talking about how really within hip-hop lyrics you have the same kind of things you might find in T.S. Eliot's Wasteland, where you can talk about allusions and irony and tone and diction, all kinds of things that it needs to be taken more seriously within academia. Are you still sort of finding that hip hop is relegated to the margins in ways you think it shouldn't be?
Well, there's actually, I think, two kinds of literature developing. One is the one you've just referred to, where people who do either cultural studies or work in literature are writing about the genre itself. So I think about people like Mark Anthony Neal or Trisha Rose or Imani Perry at Princeton, who are writing about hip hop. And then there's this other group of scholars with whom I would probably more closely align, who are talking about hip hop and education or hip hop and teaching. So you have people like Mark Lamont Hill out of Morehouse, and Mark is often seen on CNN as a commentator, who wrote a book called Beats, Rhymes, and Classroom Life. Christopher Emden has written a piece on urban science education. Emory Petchauer is talking about hip-hop teaching in higher ed. Bettina Love out of the University of Georgia has written about hip hop and pedagogy. So there is this really growing field that is looking at how do we incorporate hip hop in teaching and learning.
Well, let's say you have a microphone in front of you, which you do, but let's say that you have a chance to reach every parent of a middle school or high schooler and every teacher. What would you most want to have them think about that they might not be thinking about?
Well, I would want to remind them that our kids come with knowledge. They are not empty vessels. They are not, as the philosophers said, tabula rasa. They already have experiences, and they already have knowledge. And they have language. And so to the degree that we can pull out from kids what they have, we have this wonderful, wonderful opportunity to ensure that they learn. I start one of my classes by having the students. I read Marge Piercy's piece. I believe it's Marge Piercy. I may be wrong. Where I'm From. And then I ask the students, okay, now I need you to write a Where I'm From piece. It is amazing on day one of a class to hear kids, young people, because I'm teaching undergraduates here, but to have young people literally write out where they're from, where you wouldn't know that if all you're doing is pushing stuff into them. The opportunity to pull things out of them. And throughout the semester, I have students go back to your Where I'm From poem. How would you change that? How would you make that different? The last class I taught, I had the students create a mixtape. In other words, think of all the music you're listening to. Think of some topic that you think is really important for to be taught in a classroom. Now find the music that would work with that and justify each of those pieces that you include. I have an amazing array of mixtapes on topics that are central to the curriculum, but I would have never thought of all that music that gets associated with it.
That's a beautiful way of putting it, that they've all coming in with stories, which brings me back to the one we started with Anthony Ward's piece called My Story, where within a matter of a few lines, he's talking about how he had to move to different schools. His mother was on drugs, but she got him an education before that. And just so much was packed in about his particular story.
Right.
Let's go out on another track from his CD. And before that, let me thank my guest, Gloria Latson-Billings, for joining me this hour. And we're going to put some links on the website that you might find useful for exploring more about hip-hop in education. I'm Emily Auerbach, and this is University of the Air.
It in the Lex or the Chevy. Make sure every system got this song on blast, cause only the truth gon' last.
The truth is,
you only got one life to live. Can't take nothing with you, so let's learn how to give. More time, more love for those who really need it. Let's make that the measurement that says we've succeeded.
The truth is,
the way to something new is revolution. That's backed by the fact that we got the Constitution. So don't be scared, go get prepared, cause the change gon' come when we bang that drum.
The truth is,
you could be the next great leader. Sitting in the suburbs or in the hood with a heater, diagnosed with cancer. You still got the answer, so lift your voice now. Don't back down.
The truth is,
this music is the way that I express the truth. I believe you'd expect nothing less. So please let the words penetrate your heart and get moving, cause tomorrow is too late to start. Get ready, it's about to drop so heavy. Bump it in the Lex or the Chevy. Make sure every system got this song on blast, cause only the truth gon' last. Come on and get ready, it's about to drop so heavy. Bump it in the Lex or the Chevy. Make sure every system got this song on blast, cause only the truth gon' last. Get ready, it's about to drop so heavy. Bump it in the Lex or the Chevy. Make sure every system got this song on blast, cause only the truth gon' last. Come on and get ready, it's about to drop so heavy. Bump it in the Lex or the Chevy. Make sure every system got this song on blast, cause only the truth gon' last.